Our guest today is a high-tech product manager, member of the UNC MBA class of 2015, founder of MBA Schooled, and author of a brand new book, MBA Insider, How to Make the Most of Your MBA Experience. He is one busy guy, also a delightful interviewee. You're welcome to listen in to my conversation with Al D.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 350th episode of Admission Straight Talk. Thanks for joining me. We're going to learn more about navigating the MBA application process from our guest, but to distill the process down to its essence, you need to show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. You can learn how to do exactly that with Accepted's free guide, Fitting In and Standing Out, The Paradox at the Heart of Admissions. Master this paradox and you are well on your way to acceptance. You can download it for free at accepted.com/FISO for Fitting In and Standing Out. Again, it's accepted.com/FISO. Our guest today, Al D, earned his bachelor's in marketing and theology from Boston College in 2010, and then became a Deloitte analyst and consultant until starting his MBA at UNC's Kenan Flagler Business School. He earned his MBA from Kenan Flagler in 2015 and returned to Deloitte for a couple of years. He started in product management in 2017 and today is a senior manager in product marketing at a leading high-tech company. On the side, he started MBA Schooled in 2015 and more recently CareerSchooled.com. And he just published his first book, MBA Insider, How to Make the Most of Your MBA Experience. Al, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining me. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what you like to do for fun, that kind of stuff?
Happy to. So I grew up in upstate New York, Rochester to be exact, where it is snowy and cold very, very often. But after growing up there, I did my undergrad and moved to Boston, go to Boston College, where, as you mentioned, I was a marketing and theology major. Did some stints at Deloitte. I got my MBA at UNC, and now I live in San Francisco on the West Coast. I think I just really just didn't want to do winter anymore, to be perfectly honest. I've lived all around, and I really enjoyed living out on the West Coast. But in terms of what I like to do, or just a little bit more about me, so I have an older sister that lives in LA, but my family still lives back in upstate New York. So I am constantly on a plane visiting my my family. So travel, but also family and friends are really important. I'm a runner, which makes it interesting with all the hills here in San Francisco, but I still do it and still try to stay in shape. And I, which you alluded to, I've always had an interest in writing. I wouldn't necessarily consider myself, I never really consider myself a writer, but I always like to write, kind of share my thoughts, whether that was in a journal or through kind of like one-off things here or there. And eventually that became a little bit more than just a hobby for me. But and the last thing I would say is I am a sports fanatic. So I follow basketball, football, baseball, you name it. It's something that I enjoy.
You either like to be on the move or you like to watch people on the move.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And, you know, growing up, I played all sorts of sports, and I think that's probably where it kind of started with. But, you know, I think that some of the best lessons I've learned in my life have come from some of those being on a team, you know, on a sports team, and, you know, working with other people, and, you know, having pursuing a common goal together, and also just kind of putting in the work on something that is something you care about, right? And being in the trenches and working really hard. So I always have a great respect for particularly for the athletes out there who really put a lot into their craft to kind of be at their best. And I try to emulate some of that in my own work too.
Okay, great. How did you get interested in marketing and product development?
Yeah, sure. So that's a great question. So I've been in consulting for my career, and I always kind of knew that it was not a matter of like if, it was more a matter of when I would leave consulting. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I just knew that there was other things out there I wanted to try. And one of the exercises I did, which many students do in business school, is you kind of write out all the things that you like doing, all the things that you are good at, and maybe some examples of what those are. And then you get some feedback on it. So you talk to your peers and you talk to your coworkers and your friends and the like, and you kind of start to get a better sense of the things you like doing and the things you're good at. And then you start talking to people, trying to understand, like, where does this fit, or like, what does this look like within, you know, a company or within an industry? And what I realized, you know, then is, and is that a couple things. Number one, I really like being in a position where I can be the evangelist for something, like an organization, like a product, like a cause.
Does that go back to the religion major as an undergrad?
Yeah, I think it might. It might actually. No, to be perfectly honest with you, I mean, one of the reasons why I studied theology was because I really enjoyed reading about people who come up with ideas and defend them and kind of try to spread them throughout the world. And so I absolutely do think that there could be something there. And for sure, one of the tie-ins for sure is, so I was student body president in high school, student body president in college, and I was on the student council when I was in business school. And so just that notion of being that ambassador or being kind of that evangelist for something was something that always was very strong to me. I think the other thing I really enjoyed was kind of, in addition to that ambassador, evangelist kind of role, is like this idea of understanding who you're serving. And in this case, it's the customer. So being able to deeply know them and understand them and to understand what they like, what they don't like, and their challenges and pain points. And then to be able to come up with a solution or a product that kind of fits their need. So as I started like realizing like all these things, you know, that's when people kind of like, oh, yeah, like this is product marketing. This is what you could be doing. And so that was when I realized like, oh, this could be a really good opportunity for me. And so I went through the process of looking for opportunities and was fortunate enough to land one. And now I'm a product marketer, and I have been for the past 2 years. And I certainly still use some of those really core skills you build as a consultant, just in terms of structured thinking and problem solving and cross-functional work and, you know, being able to communicate your ideas, but it's just still definitely a lot of different things as well. And I'm learning every day, which is what I truly enjoy about it. But I love being able to kind of be that evangelist and that point person and ambassador for a product. And I'm really enjoying being a product marketer right now.
That's great. Now let's go back in time. You became a product marketer manager after two years after leaving your MBA, right? Let's go back to when you applied to MBA school, which was admittedly a while ago.
It was. Yeah, it was.
What did you find most difficult in the MBA application process, or what stood out for you as being difficult as you look back?
Sure. Yeah. So a couple strategic, couple tactical things. So from a very tactical level, I got waitlisted at every school I applied to. So
that was difficult. That is hard.
It was hard. And ironically enough, I actually, you know, 5 years ago when I did the blog for Accepted, you know, that was one of the things that I wrote about, was my experience getting waitlisted. And so tactically, you know, that was a challenge. But, you know, strategically,
emotionally, that's a challenge also.
It does. It is an emotional roller coaster for sure. Strategically, I think that, you know, in the application process, right? You know, this is such a big decision, right, in terms of deciding to go to business school, and it certainly takes a lot of effort. And I think that there is this tendency to treat every single outcome as binary, right, in terms of you either get accepted or rejected, right, or it either works out, you want it, or it doesn't. And I think that just puts a lot of pressure on people because, you know, the application, I mean, yes, there are some nuances, some challenges like you need to get accustomed to, and thankfully there's places like Accepted where you can learn about them. But, you know, at the end of the day, you apply, you submit some things, and they tell you if you're in or you're not. And like it, fundamentally, it's a process. But I think where people get hung up a lot is that it feels like such a big decision because you are investing so much time and effort and money. And so I think that there are a lot of times where I put a lot of undue pressure on myself because I was like, oh, my God, I need to get this right. It needs to be perfect. Like I have to get in or else my life's not going to work out. Right. And so. Now, later, what I realized that, you know, when you get waitlisted at six schools, there's a whole other set of pressures that come your way. But I think strategically, like, it's just at that age in my career, I was 24 or 25. And to feel like so much was riding on the rest of my career, like I put a lot of undue pressure on myself to want to be able to make it right. And what I've realized now is that, and with the benefit of hindsight, is that things have a way of working out. You may not see it in the moment, but in the grand scheme of things, they do. And if I had a little bit more of that wisdom then, like I think I would have put a little bit less pressure on myself, or I would have been less caught up on things, or wouldn't have, you know, spent 5 hours over one sentence on my resume, because I would have realized like, oh, like it's going to be okay. And then, you know, when I talk to students now, I was just talking to someone last night who was applying, and, you know, they have their applications due in a couple days. And I was just like, you're not going to appreciate this because you're in the thick of this, but like, I'm telling you, it's going to be okay. Like, you did your homework, like you read all the information, you checked all the boxes, like it's going to be okay. And as things happen, like we'll work on them together and it'll be fine. But yeah, in hindsight, like it's a lot easier to say that than when you're in the thick of it and you're staring at an admissions deadline, you know, in a couple of days.
Right. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the application process is not about your self-worth, you know. Ooh,
totally.
It's about one school, or sometimes one, you know, a few individuals, assessment of your fit at their program. That's all it's really about.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And again, like, you know, given where most common applicants between, you know, where they are in their careers and how old they are, I know for me, like, I definitely was still in the mindset of, you know, oh, well, if I don't get in, then this means I'm not a good candidate, or like, this means I'm not cut out for, you know, this school. And it's like, no, it's what you just said. It just means that someone or some admissions committee doesn't necessarily think you're as good of a candidate as, you know, someone else. And that's all it is. But it's hard sometimes to kind of remove yourself a little bit from that.
At this point in time. Yeah. And it's also at this point in time. It could be, I was talking with somebody a few days ago who won a free consultation through one of our webinars. Mm-hmm. And she was not in a good position for what she wanted to go for. And I was encouraging her to postpone her application, to do additional preparation. And I gave her a laundry list of things that I felt she should do. Maybe five items on the laundry list. Maybe it wasn't even so long, but they were going to be time consuming.
Yeah.
And I could tell that she was disappointed in the advice I was giving her, which I don't like to disappoint people, but I also don't think it's worthwhile if I just tell them what they want to hear to make them feel good.
Right.
So at the end of the call, I said to her, look, I'm telling you, I really think you can do this. I just think you need to take these steps to show that the issues I saw are no longer relevant.
Yes.
Then they're not going to hamper your performance. And right. I said, you can do this. I'm not saying you can't do this. I'm just saying that your chances of acceptance are going to be better in the future if you take these steps.
Right.
She was still disappointed. But I think that's also key, that maybe today you're not right for this particular program, but maybe tomorrow you will be. And maybe you have to take certain steps to change yourself and make you yourself a more competitive candidate for that school. It doesn't change your self-worth as a person. It doesn't mean you're going to be a failure or anything like that. There needs to be a little perspective.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And to your point, going back to your question, like, I think one of the other hard things is that fortunately, I did get off the waitlist at UNC and I did decide to go. But there was a good period of time where I kept thinking to myself, should I postpone? You know, should I give, you know, I got waitlisted at five really great schools. Like, I'm almost there. Like, does it make sense for me to wait? You know, like, I can still work at Deloitte and apply again in the next round. And so that there was a little bit of challenge there in terms of figuring out if that was the best decision was for me at that time. Because to your point, like, you know, maybe I could have been a better candidate, you know, had I had maybe just a little bit more time to strengthen my application or get a better GMAT score or have a little bit more work experience, because I was still a little bit on the younger side. So there was a little bit of challenge there in terms of figuring out what the right decision was. And I think it worked out for me, and I'm happy with the decision that I made. So that was another challenge. I'm sure not other people have that too.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people do have it where they get into school X and they also always wonder, could I have gotten into that one, you know? Or what if I wait? You know, that
sure.
I get that question every year. I've been accepted to this school. I'm waitlisted at this school. I really want to go to that one. Should I take the bird in hand or reapply?
It's the same old bird in hand analogy, you know, and it's funny, and maybe you can relate, maybe not, but I've talked to hundreds of MBA students over the past few years, and students who are at schools ranked in schools 15 to 20 all wish they were at schools in 10 to 15. The people at schools from 10 to 15 all wish they were at schools of 5 to 10. And the schools
human nature.
All wish they were at HBS and Stanford, and the people at Stanford wish they were at HBS, and the people at HBS wish they were at Stanford, right? Grass is always greener. And,
right.
You know, it's funny how universal some of these things are. But what I've learned and what this process, I think, taught me as well is that sometimes it's not so much what happens, but what you choose to do with what happens. And I'm fortunate that people around me and I came enough to my senses to kind of, you know, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, and it's worked out. But
it doesn't sound like UNC was really a lemon.
No, not at all. It was, or if it was, it was a pretty darn good lemon.
So a very sweet one.
Yeah.
What was most valuable in your UNC MBA experience?
Yeah. So I think for me, what was most valuable was that it was a supportive and collaborative community. And just like many other top MBA programs, there's lots of great opportunities. There's lots of great resources. There's lots of smart people. If you're proactive, you can find your niche. But having collaborative but also supportive people to kind of guide you in the process or be there with you in the process was incredibly valuable. Not only just in the classroom, but with you know your career pursuits or your with whatever you're kind of working on. And I think, you know, business school really is a unique environment because you can really try things, but not only try them and fail, but like have people around you to help you make sense of them, right? So these are people who can kind of, who have had that experience before, whether it's a professor who's got experience in that particular discipline or field to kind of give you feedback, or, you know, with your classmates, when you do try something and it doesn't work out, who can kind of give you the tough love or pick you up when you need to kind of give you the confidence you need to not only learn from it, but to move forward. And so there are a number of things that I, you know, tried in business school that I think were really helpful because the people around me were either willing to open doors to enable me to take advantage of that opportunity or to be there and be supportive and to give me feedback so I could learn from it or give me coaching and guidance in between. And quite frankly, one of the reasons of how I started MBA school and how the blog kind of came to life was really through the help of my classmates and some of the professors who gave me some feedback on how to make it work and bring it to market. So I would, you know, very tactically, I don't know if I would have been able to do that if I didn't have such a supportive and collaborative community that was there. So I think for me, out of everything I did, I think that was really like a great thing. And then the other thing I would just say, I know you said one, but I'm going to cheat and say two.
Go ahead.
For me, everyone is different, but going to an MBA program that is a little bit smaller was a really big benefit for me. I'm someone who likes to build deep relationships. I have to put in effort to do it, but I will put in the effort. But being able to do that, I think sometimes is a little bit easier at a smaller school because you literally know the name of every single person in your class or relative, right? And so being able to kind of be in a smaller environment, people are collaborative and supportive where you can really get to know people and build relationships as to being in, you know, maybe a little bit bigger class, I think really added a lot of value for me. And, you know, I think in addition to that, being at a school where, you know, don't get me wrong, love Chapel Hill, but it's not the same as going to school in New York City or going to love Chapel Hill, but it's not. And so I think what you find with towns like Chapel Hill and other schools like it is that the people who chose to go there are very cognizant that the reason that they're going there is for the community and the town and really want to be there. Whereas right. I think that some people think about that when they go to schools in the big cities, but I think a big allure of going to an MBA program in a big city is, you know, the fact that they can be in New York and explore all that's there. So I really just genuinely felt that not only did people want to be in Chapel Hill and want to invest in it, but they really enjoyed it and they were going to take the time to really throw themselves into, you know, school and UNC as opposed to maybe focusing more on like New York and what New York has to offer. So I for me, that was really great. Everyone's different, but for me, I think that really made a difference.
What could have been improved?
Yeah, sure. So I think that a couple things. One, the flip side to going to a small school is that you're by the sheer law of numbers, your network is smaller. And at the time, I was trying to recruit for internships for tech companies based in San Francisco. And so when you're at a school that's 3,000 miles away or that has a little bit smaller of a network, it just means you have to hustle a little bit harder. And so I think that was definitely something that was a challenge and something they have definitely been improving. If you look at their employment statistics reports, you can kind of see the placements on the West Coast in tech have exponentially gone up since I was in school. So I think that's one thing. And I think the second thing is, and you'll find this at a lot of schools, but this was true at UNC, and it's definitely getting better. Classes are taught based off of the research that professors typically do. And for the work that I was interested in doing, which was marketing at a B2B software company, at the time, there were not as many professors who were doing research in those fields, and thus there were not as many classes that were focused on that topic. So a lot of what I had to learn was on my own, and there were plenty of other classes that I took that were really valuable. But you know, at the time, that was something that was an opportunity for growth. And again, because tech has gotten more prominent across the board, I think a lot of schools have definitely woken up. I mean, you can see it from the wave of classes now on technology and analytics and things like that. So
not to mention the hiring in tech companies. That's
right, exactly. So they've responded, but back then, I don't want to say back then, but like back then, early days when it came to that stuff.
All right. Now, when you started your MBA, did you know already that you ultimately wanted to go into high-tech product marketing or product management?
I wouldn't say that per se. I think I definitely wanted to work at a tech company at some point. And I think that, in my time at Deloitte, the work I did was really in two aspects. Number one, helping large organizations implement new technologies to deliver better experiences for their customers. Right. And so many of these large organizations were outdated, but knew they needed to be more innovative. And that's why they wanted to harness new technologies. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I did was I helped Deloitte think about their own kind of strategy as a firm and how do they develop new innovative offerings and services to meet the needs of their customers. And what I kind of realized was that at some point in my career, instead of helping, these companies catch up, I wanted to be at a company that was at the forefront. Right. And so typically at the time, and even still now, that's what tech companies were. And so I knew that I wanted to work at a tech company. I wasn't sure exactly what that was going to kind of dovetail into in terms of a role or function. But through business school and through my time back at Deloitte, quite honestly, that's when I kind of figured out more of the connecting the dots. But I think I did know going in that a tech company would be something that I'd be interested in.
When you graduated, you went back to Deloitte. Were you disappointed to go back to Deloitte? Were you happy to go back to Deloitte? I mean, did you feel like, why did I go for an MBA if I'm back where I was before? Or did you get a position that really was attractive to you at Deloitte?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, and I actually was just talking about this with someone yesterday. I was happy to go back to Deloitte for a couple of reasons. Number one, I was a sponsored Deloitte consultant. So financially, it made a lot of sense. But number two, I actually did a summer internship in product marketing when I was in business school. And at the end of the 12 weeks, I got to the end of it and there were some things that I liked. But quite honestly, I didn't know if it was something that I wanted to do because there is a lot of unknown. And so I couldn't definitively say if that was what I wanted to go back into. And, the last thing I would say is that working at a big consulting firm, it's kind of like being a part of a different kingdom or fiefdom. Right. And really within big firms, there's lots of groups within them. And what I realized going back was that I had a chance to go back and work with a lot of the same people I previously worked with, people who I enjoyed working with and working for, people who I respected, people who knew me and knew what I was capable of and who were going to help me manage my own career and support me. And so I looked at those as positive things, but I did go back with a mindset of, look, like, you should do this and you should work hard, but you should keep one eye open and think about, what could be after this, because that this is not going to be something you're going to do forever. So no, I was happy to go back. And also the other big thing was that as a result of going back, I got to choose the office that I wanted to be out of. And I decided to move out to the San Francisco office. So I was happy to go back. And, I think that, a good lesson for me from that experience, I'm someone who can always make the best of a situation. Like I just always have that mindset. But
mindset to have.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. I thank my parents for it. But I think that when you proactively manage your career, things tend to kind of fall into place. You need help, but like when you really own it and really drive it, you can kind of create the conditions that you want. And so that ended up in the end kind of like working out. And I'm very grateful for my time at Deloitte. I'm still very much, you know, in touch with many of my colleagues, but no, I did like the fact that I was going back there.
All right. Now, you had, before you went for your MBA, you had an undergrad degree in business, and you had worked as a Deloitte consultant for 4 years before you went back to business school. Yeah. Did you actually learn much from your studies? I mean, MBAs always talk about the network, the network, the network. But what about the classes that you're actually paying for? I mean, Are you glad you spent the time and money for an MBA?
Sure, I am. So a couple things. Number one, when I was in college and studied, you know, business, like you take your marketing, you take your finance, you take your accounting, very much you'd like to do in business school. And I think at that time, the undergrad level was very good at exposing you to some of the concepts and some of the term and a lot of the terminology. And in addition to that, it was good at helping you understand the four P's of marketing, or like, here is a balance sheet. What business school teaches you is, here are how marketing decisions are going to impact the balance sheet, right? Or here's how a supply chain problem is actually a customer experience problem. So the MBA level is really good about helping you kind of connect the dots and to get out of just the terminology and the foundations and more about the integrations and how they connect together. So I think that was number one. I think number two is, you're right. Like, I worked at Deloitte and, you know, I had some experience working for companies and the like, but yes, it's still the network, but the network in this case is that the experiences that your classmates bring into the classroom about being able to say, like, yeah, like, this is how we had a really big supply chain problem and like how that impacted our business and how, you know, all this and the other, and this is how we solved it. That is extremely valuable. And you cannot get that in undergrad for sure, because no one has the experience, right? You're just really relying on the professor at that age. So I think that piece of it is valuable. And I think the third thing, which you get a little bit in consulting, but you, not everyone obviously works consulting, is the way that classes are taught in business school is that for the most part, there is never enough time to get through all of the material in the allotted class, right? There just isn't. And so you kind of have to make decisions about what you're going to learn. And you also have to think about how to learn best, right? And I think with the core of it, what it teaches you is how to learn how to learn. And you have to develop a process for how you're going to synthesize a bunch of information, make it make sense, and then apply it in some kind of way, whether that's on a group project, on a test, on a consulting project for, you know, another company or something like that. And I think that alone is really, really valuable because, you know, in the future of work, you know, the people who are going to succeed are the people who are going to continuously learn and acquire new skills, right? And business school really teaches you that. I think at the undergrad level, it's really hard to get there with that. It's hard to grasp. So I think that is a really big valuable piece that is sometimes overlooked, but I think is critically important, especially as, you know, the skills gap widens and so forth.
How did you come to found MBA Schooled and Career Schooled?
Sure. So when I was in business school, one of the things that I thought about a lot was, you know, when you're going and you're applying to business school, there's lots of great places to find information, like Accepted, to figure out where should I apply? How do I navigate the admissions process? How do I choose school A or school B? There's lots of great information out there to help you sort through those. But when I was in business school, and like many other students, you're constantly bombarded with decisions that you have to make. And you can make them and you can rely on other people, but there's not as much information out there about what those are like, the sheer volume of them that are happening and how to make, you know, how to best decide. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to create kind of a blog that kind of walked through this and kind of shed light to both current and prospective students about what business school is like, what MBA students go through, and how business school students use their MBA experience to accelerate their career goals or to grow. And that was why I started MBA school, was really to kind of pull back the curtain and really show what it was like. And so I started it when I was a second year at UNC, and I've been writing about it ever since. I've written hundreds of articles. And I started Career School under the same vein, but to kind of focus on how do you build and grow your career? So not just for MBA students, but for anyone, you know, what do you need to do, particularly as I was saying before, in the future of work to not only have a career that you enjoy and that you like, you find meaning in that supports your lifestyle, but that helps you evolve and grow as you evolve and grow. So I've always kind of really believed in this mantra I call like learning and teaching. So being able to learn things and then being able to teach them and share them with others, one, because it helps you master it, but two, because it makes sure that, you know, you're looking out for other people and you're sharing what you know with other people. And I really have found that, you know, blogging and writing and all of that is a really great way to share what I've learned with other people so that it benefits them in some way, shape, or form.
Wow. Okay. Do you have guest writers on those two blogs, or is it all you?
Yeah. So it's all me, for the most part. I do make use of some, freelancers here and there to help with editing or graphics or the like.
Sure.
And, you know, just because I do have a full-time job that I really enjoy.
Yes.
It's a lot of me and a lot of me, building relationships with MBA students and schools and administrators and the like to understand really what's going on out there. Or in my case, also for career school, going out and finding people who are doing really interesting things in their career and trying to learn from them about what they're doing, what makes them successful, some of their tips and tricks, some of the things that they've learned, and then being able to synthesize that and share it in a way that can be relevant to my readers and the audience at large. And but for the most part, it's a one-man show. But, you know, in writing this book I had to go out and do a lot of research. And, you know, while I ended up writing the book, I wouldn't have been able to do it if it weren't for the help of all the people, the types of people who I had interviewed over the years, who I talked to about these topics, who gave me the insight to really generate the book and put it all out there. So,
well, your book has tons of interviews in it. And why don't you just tell us about your book, The MBA Insider, How to Make the Most of Your MBA Experience. Why did you write it?
Absolutely. So it kind of stems from the, you know, why I built the blog for MBA school, right? It's just, I wanted to put something out there that could help prospective and current students navigate business school and expose them to what it's like, how to make the right decisions. An MBA in education is a huge investment. And I felt like, you know, particularly for many of your listeners, those who probably applied and are waiting to hear back, or maybe it had been accepted. A common thing I've heard in this kind of research process was that I always used to ask people, you know, if you know, or as current students and alum, if you knew then what you knew now, what you know now, like what would you have done differently? And a lot of them kind of said, like, you know, like, I really wish I could have gotten to school with maybe just a little bit better sense of what I was getting myself into. That way, like, I wouldn't have been so overwhelmed to start. And this book kind of takes all those things that you would help if you knew a little bit earlier and gives people in bite-sized information some of the tips, the best practices, as well as examples of how students have navigated these so that they can have that information right now. So that when you start, like, yes, it's still going to be crazy. It's still going to be challenging. But instead of stressing about five things, maybe you're only stressing about two because the other three you already took care of. And what this really book really is it's meant to be that how-to guide for navigating business school so that you can achieve the goals you want to achieve, so that you can pursue the experiences you want to pursue. And so you can confidently navigate all the decisions that you have to make in business school. Some of the ones that I have struggled with, some of the ones that many other MBA students have struggled with.
You know, one of the things I always say as a admissions consultant is that you have to have a goal for your MBA.
Yes.
All right. And I think you're kind of highlighting that. And frankly, it's, I think, one of the most common missed pieces. Everybody knows they need to have GMAT or GRE. Everybody knows you need an undergraduate GPA. And they're focusing very much on that. But I think a logical goal for the MBA, it's necessary for admissions at almost all programs. It's also necessary to make an intelligent decision about whether this is a good investment for you.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And as an admissions consultant, I'm sure you hear this from time to time, but one of the things that I talk about in the book and that came up a bunch of times in the interview was that the nice thing about business school is that it really is 2 years for you to figure out how, and you get that 2 years to manage your time and to really use it the way that you want. Now, if you want to go to business school and use all that time to just explore and find yourself, like, yes, like you could do that if that was what you wanted to do. But what a lot of people told me was that while just because you can do that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the best strategy. And to your point, yes, like maybe you don't know everything right away and maybe it's going to evolve and change and that's okay. But it is sensible to come in with some kind of game plan, something that like you can use as a starting point. And if it evolves, that's fine. But to come in with a blank slate while you could do that.
It's a bad idea.
Exactly. And, you know, and so it's just, and it, that's also some of that, just honestly, speaks to the fact that at this point, like the top MBA programs have so many great opportunities and experiences that unless you do come in with some kind of game plan, it's just too easy to kind of go all over the place or to be over, you know. I think in the interview you did with me back in 2013, my exact word was it's an all you can eat buffet.
That's what it can feel like sometimes. Well, one of the things I've said it on the podcast before, so listeners will have heard it from me before if they're regular listeners. If you have a goal, it's not a straitjacket. It's a direction. So you can be like a weather vane that maybe adjusts in the wind, but definitely has direction. If you don't have any direction and the wind blows, you just spin around. You're a broken weather vane.
Yeah.
And you will run from project and extracurricular activity to extracurricular activity. You won't know where to focus your time and energies. You won't know what to prioritize.
Yes, absolutely.
So, are there any favorite interviews in your book? Any particular lessons shared other than the one we just discussed?
Yeah, no, I think, and tying a little bit to that, what you just talked about, that weather vane analogy, one of the interviews I did with a gentleman named Charlie Mangiardi, who went to Stern, is that, you know, his goal coming in was to, he wanted to do something at the intersection of business, education, and the nonprofit world. And like a lot of students, he ended up recruiting for consulting. And he ended up not getting it, but he ended up in the summer doing an internship for a large financial institution. He ended up doing well, ended up getting an offer. And as he was coming back to campus, he was kind of debating, like, should I take this offer? Should I not? And he was having a really hard time making the decision. But, you know, coming back to his weather vane, right, and coming back to, like, his goal, like, he thought about it. And he realized that this internship would, and it's taking this full-time role, was not aligned with what he set his goal and what he knew that he wanted. And it's really hard sometimes to turn down a really lucrative job offer, burden, you know, when you have it in your hand, like, you know, versus choosing to go through the recruiting process in the second year. But that's what he did, because the more he reflected on it, the more he thought about it, the more he talked with his guides and mentors, he realized this wasn't the right for him. Eventually, he ended up finding an opportunity and doing consulting in the higher education industry, which is more aligned with like what he set out to do. But it took him a little bit longer, a little bit more work and some self-reflection to really get to that point. And then the other one I would say was with a Duke Fuqua MBA student, Shannon Greaser. Shannon graduated from Fuqua last year. But on this common notion of self-reflection and self-awareness, I think she's kind of the epitome of doing that in business school. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, business school is the first time in their career after working really hard, you do actually have a time to like take a step back and say,
reflect.
Hold on a second. Like, what have I done? Right? Like, what have I accomplished? What has been great about that? What has been challenging? Like, what do I want to do in the future? What is the impact I want to make? And you certainly get some of that. I'm sure you do when you work with your clients in terms of helping them craft that in the admissions process, but it doesn't have to stop with the application. And what I love about Shannon's story is just being intentional about making opportunities for her to self-reflect and understand herself. And then using that insight that she's gained, whether it's to take on a new opportunity based off of the feedback she got from self-reflecting, or just making space to consistently get feedback from her peers and to use that to kind of funnel her experience to help make sure that she was being intentional about her time in business school, but also thinking more about her career. And I think what that helped her realize was that she didn't need to figure everything out right away. And I think she came in with this mindset of, oh, I have to figure it out all in business school and be set for the next 30 years. But through that notion, she realized, as long as I just keep this process of self-reflection and self-awareness and baking this feedback into how I make decisions, it doesn't matter. I don't need to define the next 30 years. I need to have a goal, and I just have a good process for making the right decisions from time to time. So I think those two were really things that stuck out to me, that if you focus on that weather vane and if you make time for self-reflection and self-awareness, like, I think it can really improve your chances of achieving your goals in business school.
Right. I remember Dee Leopold, the former head of admissions at Harvard Business School. She used to say, we don't expect you to have a laminated life plan.
Right.
Very, very clearly her saying that. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to that. I think that, again, you need a weather vane. It's not a straitjacket, and it shouldn't be broken and spinning around aimlessly. Do you have any tips at the, any last tips for MBA applicants? Obviously, we've talked about a lot of things here.
Sure. Yeah, I think that so, you know, obviously, if you're a current applicant and you're not sure where to go, there's lots of information out there. Again, Accepted is a great place to start. And I truly, I did use it when I was going through the process. This is not a paid plug. But in general, like there's a lot of resources at your disposal, whether it's places like Accepted, whether it's talking to schools itself. I mean, really, truly finding out like what that experience is like. And I really urge you, if you are still kind of in that exploratory phase, don't just read what's on the website or look at the stats. Like really take a deep look at like what a student's day looks like, right? Or another thing is like, if you're going to talk to students or alum, one piece of advice is get a different mindset. So talk to a recent student, talk to an alum from 2 years out, and talk to an alum from 10 years out, right? Because at some point you could be one of them. And you know what? They may be saying different things, but all that will be helpful, but context matters. So that's one piece of advice. I think the second piece of advice is if you've already applied or you've gotten in, congrats. That's a huge accomplishment, but don't stop, right? Like, think about what life is going to be like when you set foot on campus, right? And whether that's reaching back out to students, checking out what's going on in student life and getting a pulse of that. Certainly you can buy MBA Insider. I wouldn't hate that. It might be a great, great guide and great help. But similar to what I was saying before, when I was doing my research and talking to MBA alums and students, you know, going back to like, if I knew then what I know now, this time of after you've gotten accepted or when you kind of know you're going to when you start, there's a lot of things that you can do. And really honing in on a couple of those things, I think that could be really valuable. So I would say for if you're kind of in that boat of like you've already applied or you've already been accepted, that would be my advice is to think about what you can do right now that will make you even better come day one of when you start.
That's great advice. Thank you very much. What would you have liked me to ask you?
I would like you to challenge me to give more specific guidance as to what are those things that you could do, because it's great that, you know, to prepare, but you know, I kind of need to be action oriented here. So, what would you recommend would be the question.
All right. What would you recommend more specifically?
Yeah. So, if you've already gotten in, the first thing I would recommend that you do, if you haven't done already, is save money. Business school is expensive.
Very practical.
Whether that's tuition or any of the trips or experiences that you might want to take or will take that don't necessarily get factored into the tuition cost, save what you can. It's really, really important. Disclaimer, I am not a financial advisor, so take whatever you want for that. But I never hurts to do that because there will be things that you want to do, and you will probably stress less if you are in a better financial position than by saving now. So that first table stakes. The second thing I would say is that if you are thinking about a pre-MBA internship or aren't, now is the time to think about it. If you want to get another internship before you go to school, it's a great way to get one more experience in. It's a great way to test your hypotheses of what you think you want to do after business school. But it takes planning and time because you'll need to quit your job early if you haven't already. You'll need to actually find one. You'll need to interview one, and you'll need to do it. So that all takes a lot of time. And I interviewed a current student in my book, Nate Jones at UT Austin, who did exactly that. He left his job early, found an internship, and it was a great way for him to confirm that what he is doing now was what he wanted, or what he wanted to do was truly something he wanted to do. And then I would say the last thing is that really continue that self-reflection that you've done about like your career aspirations so that when you do get to campus, you really are confident and an hypothesis that you want to test for a career after business school. You know, the career search starts early, like it just does. And like definitely for investment bankers and consultants, it literally starts day one, but still for everyone else. So if you need to go out and talk to more people in that field, if you need to go talk to students, I think that's a really great thing. Another great thing is to continue working on your resume. A shocker for some of you, if you don't know this already, when you get to campus, all that time and effort you put in your existing resume, you're going to have to do that again because they have a format. The school has a format that it's going to want you to put it in. So one very tactical thing you can do is go email some students or email the Career Services Center and say, hey, what is your resume template? Can I have it? You can start working on it now. And if you don't want to do that, one thing I would recommend doing is create a brag book or a list of accomplishments of all the things that you've done, if you haven't done that already, because that will either go into whatever this new resume template you build, or it's going to help you prepare for when you have to start talking to recruiters and hiring managers for those interviews, right? So really deeply understanding your experiences and literally listing them out will help you become much more prepared for getting to that point. So those are a couple of things I might think about.
That's great advice. Thank you very much, Al. I think we're also just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me. Where can listeners find you and your book online?
Sure. So you can go to mbaschool.com. If you want to know more specifically about MBA Insider, you can go to mbaschool.com/MBA Insider, and you can actually download a free chapter of the book. And then lastly, the book is available on Amazon for pre-order. If you type in MBA Insider right on Amazon, it'll come right up, and you can reserve your copy today.
Actually, when will the book come out? Because I think the show will air after it's out.
Sure. So the book will come out on January 28th. So yeah, it'll be available on Amazon after January 28th, and both in Kindle as well as paperback version.
Okay, great. Yes, the show will, so the book will be available when this goes live, so you can order it immediately. And we're going to link to it from both MBA Schooled and to Al's book, MBA Insider, How to Make the Most of Your MBA Experience, from the show notes at accepted.com/350. Listener, thank you too for joining Al D and me for Admission Straight Talk's 350th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk. And a quick reminder, master the paradox at the heart of graduate admissions by downloading our free guide, Fitting In and Standing Out, The Paradox at the Heart of Admissions. Grab your copy at accepted.com/FISO for Fitting In and Standing Out. Again, that's accepted.com/FISO. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.